Morning. We're going to open the.
Knock it off.
We're going to open the work session on the House Bill 2619. A public hearing and possible work session. Okay, public hearing. Representative Starr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, the record, I'm Bruce Starr, Representative, House District 3, Western Washington County. And with me this morning is Phyllis Kirkwood. She's the Executive Director of the Oregon Substitute Teachers Association. What you have before you is House Bill 2619. I appreciate you scheduling this bill this morning. This is a bill that was dealt with in the Substantive Committee of Education. It had a subsequent referral to this committee. However, it does not have a fiscal. And so I would urge that the work is done in the Substantive Committee on this bill, and I would urge you just to move it so we can deal with it on the House floor. Ms. Kirkwood is here if you have specific questions related to the bill itself. This was an issue that was dealt with in the last legislative session, where we addressed substitute teacher salaries. After that was implemented, there was some minor tweaks that were come to the knowledge of the substitute teachers, and this bill addresses those. It's relatively a minor bill, and I would just urge you to move it on so we can deal with it.
Representative Brown.
What is the financial impact on the school district?
Chairman Minnis, this is Rob. My name is Phyllis Kirkwood. I'm a substitute teacher in Beaverton and president of the Oregon Substitute Teachers Association. On the second page of your testimony, we've outlined the fiscal impact that we believe it would have. Last year in 1997-98, it would have affected five districts, and this is based on information in the Oregon School Board Association survey. 1998-99, only three districts would be affected. And this is when, after 10 days, and that's in subsection 3 of the bill, after 10 days, the substitute teacher has gone to 100% of the minimum of the actual pay for the beginning teacher in that particular district. But sometimes that would go down. After 10 days, the substitute teacher has much more responsibility with lesson planning, parent contact, and so forth. So we would like the salary to go up. However, all we're asking is that it remain the same as their substitute teacher salary. If after 10 days going to a beginning teacher level, the salary would go down. And our reasoning is that the regular teacher, beginning teacher, has a benefit package of, and they're listed here, $400, $300, and so forth per month, which is not available to the substitute teacher.
I just want to say that substitute teachers, I've been a teacher. I know substitute teachers are the heroes of the system. They really come in and pick up at a time, often of crisis, and continue. And it seems to me that we have been underpaying them just historically and not appreciating the kind of contribution they make. So I just commend Representative Starr for bringing this forward, and I think we ought to accept this and move it along.
Chair, Senator Tro, I just appreciate that. I agree with you. Substitute teachers do yeoman's work in our school system, and they ought to be treated fairly and rewarded for their work.
Madam Chair?
Representative Backlund.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I taught
myself for a long, long time in the Marion High School and in Northfield before that. And, I didn't miss very much, but if I did, it's interesting that kids always had lots of comments when I returned. And I think, along with Senator Trow's comments, that I would certainly concur, substitute teaching can be very difficult. It can be quite rewarding, depending upon the classroom that that the substitute teacher is going into. Some teachers have it well organized, and the lesson plans are good, but oftentimes the lesson plans are pretty skimpy, and the kids may see this substitute teacher day as a day to kind of take a day off and goof off or whatever. So I am very supportive of substitute teachers. I think I think the schools would have a difficult time if we cannot secure adequate, trained, motivated, dedicated people who we're now calling substitute teachers. So I'm very supportive, and I thank the representative for bringing this forward, and it's an excellent, excellent thing, I believe.
Sue, do you want to address that? Thank
you. Chairman and members of the committee, I just wanted to add to Ms. Kirkwood's answer to Representative Ross's question about the fiscal impact to the school. Just to clarify, for the first 10 days that a substitute teacher is on board, they are effectively paid 85% of 1/190th of the statewide average salary for beginning teachers who hold a bachelor's degree. So effectively, they're paid 85% of that.
And that changed from 80%?
Representative Ross, no, that actually had to do with the period between July 1st, 95 and July 1st, 97. The change is that once the substitute teachers are on board for more than 10 days, if there's not a salary scale in place at the school district, then they go to 100% of that per diem amount, the one that's based on the statewide average salary for beginning teachers with a bachelor's degree. If there is a salary scale in place, then they go to 1/190th of the beginning teacher's salary at that school district. And in some cases, that's less than the 85% of the statewide average. And so those teachers were getting paid less for the days subsequent to their first 10 days. And so what this does, it adds Section B under a tree, and it puts a floor in there that simply says that they won't be paid less than the amount computed in Section 1. And so they're at least paid what they are earning for the first 10 days. If their school district salary scale for the beginning teacher is higher than the statewide average, then that per diem amount will go up. But they're at least paid that amount that they get for the first 10 days. And as Ms. Kirkwood pointed out, there are just a handful of districts that, without this amendment, fall under that statewide average. But the impact to them should not be very great. As you can see on the second page of this testimony that was handed out, for 98-99, based on the Oregon School Boards Association salary survey, the school districts of Fossil, Annex, and Paisley were under that statewide average, but the amounts were from 18 cents to $2.02 a day. So, for example, if you had a substitute teacher on board for 40 days, you're talking about $80 difference to the school district. So I just wanted to clarify for you that the fiscal impact to the schools, while indeterminate, because we can't speak to how often they're going to be using the substitute teachers, we believe it to be minimal.
And Madam Chair, just a follow-up for staff. On the second page, the Dayville district where the per diem difference is $5.37, is that just because their beginning salaries are so low there?
Representative Ross, I believe that's the case, and it looks like based on the 98-99 data that Dayville is now up to at least the statewide average, and that's why some of these that you see for 97-98 you don't see for 98-99 because they brought those beginning teacher salaries up.
So the only ones we have left in 98-99 are Fossil, Annex, and Paper.
Right.
Madam Chair.
Senator Charles.
I just wanted to comment virtually all of the substitute teachers have far more experience than a beginning teacher. And their salary is based on a beginning teacher's salary. And so just from that standpoint, this is a very modest request, to say the least.
Aaron Gordon?
That's the point that I wanted to speak to. I'm wondering why this proposal doesn't just take the substitute teachers to the 100% level. Why do we want to do something less than that for folks who do have a great deal of experience and who are walking into classroom situations that require them to put all of their skills to use immediately. What's the rationale?
Representative Minnis and Senator Gordley, we brought this matter in 1995 and tried to get erased for the long-term substitutes, but it wasn't possible at that time, and that is why we got the erase for the daily substitutes. It was raised from 75%, which it had been 75% since 1975. Then it was raised to 80% and then to 85% in 1997. We'll try again another time.
I appreciate the background. I just think it ought to be 100%.
Thank you.
Representative Starr, did you want to respond to that?
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, If there weren't other voices in this building, I think that would be possible, but we have to look at the big spectrum of K-12 financing and that this issue, if you go that route, does have a significant impact on our school districts. And so there's concerns there, and those issues have been raised in previous sessions. And so this is, you know, kind of a tweak to what we did last session, and I think it's a step in the right direction. So I'd urge your favorable.
And I think the advantage of this would be that it does provide a floor. It keeps school districts from cutting their substitute pay way back in times of crisis if they can't just take advantage of these people because they're not part of the bargaining unit. And I think that's an advantage.
Representative
Blair?
Just a question, just to follow up on Senator Gordley's concern. Is there a difficulty in recruiting substitute teachers at this particular compensation level? I would agree if you're getting only 85%, you're talking about experienced teachers. Are we running the risk of not having enough substitute teachers because of the salary level?
Well, Representative Minnis and Representative Winters, yes, substitute teachers are in demand now, and there is a shortage. In my district in Beaverton, they've had to ask teachers to come back to school when they're sick, even just to fill the classroom. And I have been asked to come in as a music teacher, and then they couldn't get anyone for the kindergarten, so the principal asked me to go into the kindergarten, and he canceled the music classes for the day. So it does go like that. In Woodburn, they were having such a hard time getting substitute teachers that they decided they would pay the minimum salary for 15 days. And then if you stick with Woodburn after your 15th day of substitute teaching in any classroom, you will go immediately to $137 a day, which is the average, which is, would be the 100%.
Representative Wolf?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Unlike some of my colleagues here, I've never taught, but I was in high school a member of a loose group of Confederates known as the Substitute Teacher Welcoming Committee.
you know about you.
I would think that giving my vote today would be the least I could do.
Any other questions?
Okay, we're going to close the public hearing and go to work session on 4619. Do I have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move that we send Senate Bill 2619 to the floor of the House. Is that where it goes?
It needs to go to the full committee.
Full time sitting here and listening to the full committee. What to do, Pat?
Senator Trow makes motion that we send House Bill 2619 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Leonard? I wanted to, Senator Trow would like to also add that a budget note next time to look at this whole compensation issue of strategic.
We don't do a budget report with bills like this, so I don't think you can do that. That's a nice reminder.
That would be a appropriate in the Department of Education budget.
When it comes,
yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, any objections?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
you.
Organizational Health and Safety Administration. And Mr. Colvin, do you want to come on up and present your testimony? We'll start with you. And you can just pull a chair alongside.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, I didn't hear you. Do you want to begin with me?
Yes, why don't you go ahead and begin?
Good morning, Chair Minnis and members of the committee. I'm Marshall Toba, representing the Oregon Ergonomic Coalition. The Oregon Ergonomic Coalition is a business coalition of healthcare, agriculture, transportation, building industry, and others who are concerned and interested in sound regulatory activities in the area of ergonomics. Ergonomics, or the study, prevention, and treatment of repetitive stress injuries, has been an area of discussion and disagreement between the medical community and regulators for a number of years. For the past several years, the federal government has considered implementing an ergonomic standard, but so far has been unable to reach consensus between the science of the issue and the perceived benefits of implementing a standard. There is a lack of conclusive evidence that an ergonomic standard would do any good. All the while, businesses have made significant improvements in the workplace and in reducing the amount and severity of musculoskeletal strains and aches in the arms, back, and neck. Today, many Oregon businesses have trained ergonomists who recognize the value of adjusting the demands of the workplace to the capabilities of their employees rather than vice versa. These business improvements, motivated by a healthier workforce and reduced workers' compensation rates, have become the norm among many employers. Today, I'm not here to debate the merits of an ergonomic standard. My involvement in this highly technical and controversial issue for only the past several months does not make me an expert, and I do not suggest that I am. However, I'm here to present to you a problem we have been working on and what we consider a rational solution, a budget note that will help our thousands of businesses across the state. I'm going to give you a little history on this issue and bring you up to date. Early in the session, several members of our coalition met with key OROSHA staff to discuss our concerns about OROSHA's program for FEV-223, which is an enforcement guidelines regarding work-related musculoskeletal disorders. This directive was issued August 7, 1998, without the benefit of rulemaking or public hearings. It expands OROSHA's authority into the controversial area of ergonomics and would enable OROSHA to require workplace modifications, additional employee training, and record keeping. If employers were not to meet these requirements, they could face fines. The directive is in your packet of material that I just handed out. I believe it's in the back. After the meeting, OROSHA sent us the material they're using to train their compliance officers to train to implement the directive. It was two three-ring binders of information. I copied the information they sent and sent it out to several professionals in the field of workplace safety. The response I received was unanimous and very concerned from those professionals. Each of the safety professionals felt that A223 was an enforcement tool, not a training tool. If fully implemented, A223 would be used to regulate activities that are not readily understood by the medical community as to their cause. This would, in effect, make Oregon businesses test cases for unproven, unscientific ergonomic equipment and procedures. On March 31, and the letter's in your packet, I believe it's on top, we sent the letter back to our OSHA administrator outlining our concerns and requesting that AC-23 be withdrawn from implementation. As you can see, we have several concerns that are outlined in the letter. Then just 2 days ago, which precipitated me being here today, on April 27th, we again met with TROSA staff. Our nearly hour-long discussion was very cordial, professional, and we appreciate their willingness to try to find a solution to the problem. However, it has become apparent that we are agreeing to disagree on the intent of A223. At the meeting, our OSHA staff indicated they have done no inspections and have only done limited training of staff. If so, we must then ask, why have directive A223? Because of this, we have turned to the committee to suggest a solution. As was mentioned earlier, Fed OSHA is once again aggressively attempting to implement an ergonomic standard. Even with the continuing disagreement among the scientific community, they're pushing hard to implement the standard. If they are successful, federal law mandates that all states adopt their standards within 6 months of implementation. In addition, Congress has funded a National Academy of Sciences study to conduct a comprehensive and impartial review of existing medical literature to determine what is known and not known about ergonomics. The review is to be completed within the next 2 years. Understanding the federal activity and appreciating the dynamics that work locally, we suggest a budget note to only do what is stated in a letter to the coalition from the OSHA administrator on February 9th that accompanied the training materials, and that's in your packet, that's the third page. And if you would look at the fifth bullet, in the letter, the administrator indicates the agency has no hidden agenda in regards to an ergonomic standard and that, quote, we will move forward only to the extent that doing so is scientifically supported, end quote. That letter's in your packet. We believe that with the federal push for a standard and the NAF study underway, it is our best interest to delay implementation of a standard that may not stand the test of the workplace or of the courts. Our proposed language, and and it's the staff. Would read. Implementation, the language, the proposed question, no, implementation of any ergonomic enforcement, regulation, or guideline shall be postponed until such time as the U.S. Department of Labor, Occupational Safety and Health Administration implements a final ergonomic standard. Or OSHA will report to the Emergency Board upon final passage of federal legislation with plans for implementation in Oregon. If federal legislation is not passed by August 2000, or OSHA will report on proposed policies and or proposed legislation to be brought to for the 2001 legislature, and it should say also at the end of that, at the next regularly scheduled emergency board, which is not on your language, but should be added, the next regularly scheduled emergency board, at the end of the budget note. This suggestion, this budget note, we believe will allow our OSHA to continue to offer their quality consultation services while staying out of the middle of the contentious disagreement going on at the federal level. I've had a chance this morning to talk to Peter Luke and Mike Greenfield, and seems to be some agreement that this is consistent with their intent and the discussions we've had, especially the letter on February 9th. Thank you for your consideration.
Any questions for Ms. Culpa? Senator Schwartz.
This question has to do with the Oregon Ergonomic Coalition. It's a coalition of what groups? Who are they?
Chairman, Senator Cho, it's a coalition of a number of business organizations representing small business, farm community, transportation, the building industry, healthcare, hospitals.
They can, has it been in existence very long?
No.
We actually just formed because of this issue?
Chairman and Senator Cho, that is correct. Last fall, the concern, there were two concerns that were brought forward. One was the Division I rules that the department has since pulled back and is now going through rulemaking on in conjunction with this issue, really brought this issue to the forefront.
Okay. My question is with regard to the budget note. For me, I don't know anything about this issue. I just This is the first time I've really heard that there was such a group and that there was such an issue. So before I would want to do this, I would like to know more. Another way of doing this would be to let the program operate as a pilot and then review it later to see whether it is onerous and causing a problem. It sounds to me like that having the workplace ergonomic makes a lot of sense. Have rules to do that probably are necessary. So, again, I guess maybe we're going to explore the problem now so we'll know more about what's happened and the agency's been unreasonable in what it's trying to do. But it does seem to me, just on the surface of things, that it makes sense to want to have a workplace that is conducive to good work and doesn't do physical damage to people.
Chairman, Senator Crowe, I couldn't agree more. And as I said in my testimony, many companies do have ergonomics on staff. So the inducement and the incentive for the business community is a healthier workforce and reduced workers' compensation rates. So a lot of this stuff is going on voluntarily on a day-to-day basis in the workforce. Our concern is the one-size-fits-all regulation idea that's coming down on the state.
We need to hear something about that from the agencies, too.
Senator Gorsuch?
Thank you very much. Mr. Coble, looking at the proposed language, what is the significance of August 2000? What is it that you expect that might happen federally by that time?
Chairman and Senator Gorley, August 2000 was chosen because it is 5 to 6 months prior to the beginning of the 2001 legislative session in Oregon. There is an aggressive push right now, and I'm sure Pete could talk to that federally about implementing the standards. I have no idea the success that will have or not have, but 2001, it gives us another year from here and about 6 months prior to the 2001 session.
Councilman Edwards?
Following along that line of question, Mr. Cobert, what do you believe that the federal government will have some policy by that time?
Chairman, it's Representative Edwards, very possibly. I mean, the administrator at the federal level is pushing aggressively for a standard at this time.
Just to follow. So, and you believe, although you just made a statement that you're criticizing the one size fits all by the state, do you believe that the federal government can also have a regulation that would not be necessarily that same, all that same description, one size fits all? I mean, why putting so many eggs in the federal basket in this case?
Chairman, it's Representative Edwards, that seems to be the debate, and I would say why there has not been a federal regulation at this time. There is concern that the science does not support the regulation does not caught up to the science. There is a lot of debate among the medical community as to the benefits and the cost benefits of implementing ergonomic standards across the workplace. And so I think the review of the NAS study review is going to help answer some of those questions. And I think in conjunction with two of those things and this timing of next summer, from what I know, and again, not being solely an expert in the issue, they're coming together, which may help a standard come together at the federal level.
And so if I'm understanding you correctly, you don't want either a federal or a state standard.
Sir, Minister Representative, that's not correct. We're proposing a delay in the state standard until the federal standard is implemented.
Thank you.
Representative Wynn?
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I understand this correctly, part of the concern that you have is that the National Academy of Science review has not really come to some definitive understanding in the field of ergonomics, just in order to tie it back to the workplace. Is that part of the debate that's going on in Washington? And until that occurs, then the federal agency, federal OSHA, will not accommodate their standards until that debate is completed. Is that what's taking place?
Chairman, it's Representative Winter, that's part of the discussion. I'm not sure that the Fed OSHA is going to wait for the standard or for the study to be completed, but that is, I know, the hope of many that are working this issue in Washington, D.C., to ensure that the science and the regulations are together as they move forward.
So our rules will be getting ahead of the completed study. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Chairman, it's Representative, that's correct.
Representative Wolf.
Thank you. And so Marshall, you're saying then that the enforcement would be based on basically an unknown standard.
Chairman, it's Representative Wilson. That's a lot of the concern that we have, is what are they training in compliance officers to, and what will they be doing in the field once they're out there?
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair, are we going to hear from Peter DeLuca?
Yes, we are. Okay. Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Colbert? Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. DeLuca, would you like to address that issue and then move into your budget?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think, first of all, Pete DeLuca, Administrator of Oregon OSHA, for the record. What we're talking about here are two different things, to a certain extent. Well, one, we're talking about what Oregon has done to this point, and another is we're talking about what Oregon might do or what people are worried that we might do. Ergonomics is a very difficult issue because, by its nature, it varies somewhat from individual to individual. And some ergonomic injuries, which may be caused by working at a particular height with your arms for one person, of course, because people aren't the same height, would be different for other people. And so that makes the issue very difficult, and it makes it very complex, and it makes it very hard to define. What we have done to this point, we have a number of regulations that are currently on the books, one of which is safety committees, another of which is reporting injuries, another of which is when we have an accident that creates time loss, people are required, employers are required to investigate that accident and to try to determine what caused it and see if they can come up with a solution. And these are the kinds of things that we have currently addressed in Oregon. They are current standards which exist for all industries, irrespective of ergonomics or anything else. They're, you know, they would be in place if a company were to have an incident of a number of broken legs, as well as carpal tunnel, as well as a bad back. And what we have done with standard A223 is to say to our compliance officers, when you go into one of these areas, there are some things that you should be looking at. By implication, we're also saying there's some things that you shouldn't be looking at. We have, for example, a general duty clause which requires all employers in the state of Oregon to provide a safe and healthful workplace. We have not asked our compliance officers to look at the general duty clause and to go in and try and make their own assessment and own determination as to what's wrong with a workplace that may be having less ergonomic difficulty. So A223 is an administrative guideline. It's my direction to my employees as to what my expectations of you are under current standards. It doesn't create any new standards. Mr. Coben and I have agreed to disagree on my characterization of A223 versus his characterization. But one thing that we do agree on, I believe, is that if you were to adopt the budget note that he suggests, that A223 would remain in force because it deals with things which are overriding and things which apply to businesses, whether we put them in A223 or not. What we would agree to do and what we have agreed from the very outset to do not to promulgate the ergonomic standard for the state of Oregon. We have the authority to do this. We don't have the desire to do this. There are plenty of other people that are looking into this. The state of Washington is studying an ergonomic standard for the state of Washington. The state of California is doing that as well. The federal government, as Mr. Koga made reference to, is also looking at an ergonomic standard. And we have basically taken a wait-and-see posture on this particular issue, and will continue to do so. The budget note that Mr. Koga has proposed would kind of codify our commitment to take that wait-and-see posture. We don't have any problem with it. But it would leave in place those other standards that we otherwise would have to enforce, and it gives some direction to compliance officers so that they're all doing the same thing in every workplace instead of having 80 different compliance officers with 80 different individual ideas of how to enforce or how to go into a workplace that has ergonomic problems. So I think it's safe to say that if you were to adopt this budget now, so we would leave A223 in place, that, and I haven't read it. I scanned it very briefly. But I think it's also safe to say that if the federal government were to adopt a standard, we would be able to do that. Of course, under our program, we're required to be at least as effective as the federal government in order to continue to have status as a state plan, and they would expect that we either adopt their standard or come up with a new one. We polled the ergonomic group that Mr. Kober represents, that we intend to put together a group of interested businesses in the top ergonomics for the purpose of determining how we're going to plan for whatever it is the feds are doing. Are we going to look to maybe adopting our own standard? I don't know the answer to this question. I'd like to hear from a group to give me some guidance. Or are we going to wait until the federal government does, in which case we'll have 6 months to adopt their standard? That's certainly a possibility. And frankly, in many respects, it's a path of least resistance. So that may be what we do, but I'd like to convene a group and talk to that group, and Mr. Kober is interested in being on that group and interested in having it.
Senator Gordon?
Thank you. Mr. DeLuca, we do not have in front of us Program Directive A223.
Yes, you do. Yes.
We do?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not called out exactly.
It is.
Madam Chair, I'm going to pass to the next person.
Senator Trail?
Yes. I don't know what this is. A program directory. It's not a guideline. It's not a regulation. It certainly is a kind of enforcement, and this budget note seems to say you're going to postpone everything. I don't know. It seems to me like the budget note would say even you're going to postpone this program directory. Are you not? How do you keep that program directive in place?
Thank you.
With this budget,
Madam Chair, Senator Crow, again, I haven't read carefully the budget note proposed, but
I think we ought to get you one, and you ought to read it carefully, and you ought to be here after you've read it carefully.
I just got it this morning.
Okay.
So I didn't just get it. I don't have a copy of it here. My understanding in talking to Mr. Kober is that this would not apply to A223, that we would leave A223 in place because it isn't a regulation. It is a directive from OROSHA administration to staff. It's strictly an internal directive.
Seems to me that it's kind of superfluous unless it's just meant to send a message, and that is you ought not to be very concerned about this issue. Seems to me like you ought to be concerned about this issue.
Madam Chair, Senator Crow, actually, we are very concerned about this issue. It's a very real issue, and ergonomic injuries comprise 50% of the injuries that we're seeing today. So we're very concerned about it. It's a question of how.
What do you think this budget note does, and why is this budget note here? What will it do?
I think it's
going to have to wait anyway for the federal.
Madam Chair, Senator Crow, I think what this budget note does, as it's been explained to me, is it would prevent us from creating a new directive, a new regulation, a new rule.
Do you intend to do that?
We have no intention to do that.
Okay. So why did they need it then? You told them that?
I told them that.
Senator, I think sometimes there's comfort in their direction.
Yeah,
so I think they just want to make it real clear what the intent is. Mm-hmm. And I think that the agency is comfortable with this. I don't think it hurts anything.
Madam Chair.
I just want to Senator Nelson.
I think this past conversation sort of addressed my concerns.
Okay.
And if I'm understanding you correctly, you do want to study the problem, you want to have a conversation about it, but you are not planning to implement new regulations right away. before you get something from the federal government. Is that correct?
Representative Ross, that is correct.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, I would have a suggestion. We would need to send this budget note out to the co-chairs because all budget notes have to be approved by them. And so I would make the suggestion that we insert the word new, implementation of any new ergonomic enforcement regulation or guideline, because we have existing safety committees reporting routines, time loss investigations. Those are things that are currently on the books that are regularly used by industry to look at their safety conditions. And what we want to say here, if I'm understanding correctly from Mr. Koba and from Mr. DeLuca, is that they're in agreement about not enforcing any new regulations. And so I want to be sure that the budget note is clear about that, because as it reads, it said implementation of any ergonomic enforcement regulation or guideline. And so that might be taken to mean that this budget note would say, Mr. DeLuca, just don't enforce any regulations until the new federal guidelines come out. And there are ergonomic problems that, if they were excessive, might fall under current regulations. And so I don't think it would be the purpose of a budget note to change current policy. That would have to be done in another way. So that would be my suggestion, is that we send it on to the co-chairs with the insertion of the word new.
Ms. Colbert, do you want to come up and speak to us?
Chairman, Representative Ross, I understand implementation of any new ergonomic standard, that would be fine with us.
Okay. Representative Edwards.
Yeah, thank you. And I was just wondering, maybe get a response from you, Mr. Koba, about the work group that he'd like to set up. Would you like to have some language in this budget that describes that? So if there is some, assuming we're asking that they come back with policies and proposed legislation, should the federal government not have some sort of rule by 2000? Does that help bring the two together? Do you feel like you don't need that language in there?
Chairman, as Representative Edwards, we, at our meeting we had just a couple nights ago on April 27th, we agreed that we would participate in this work group and think that would be positive discussion to keep this issue moving.
So you don't care if because I could, we could put language in there that would suggest that regardless of what happens with the Fed and ET, your group and OROSHA should really have some agreement about where we go in implementing that, and or whether we should have, as he described, Mr. DeLuca, our own standard. He raised the issue that the Fed may have their own, and hence the state. We don't have a policy yet or a rule. So does that help this issue if you have some language in here that has you at the table and help build some policy for us to look at next session?
Chairman, as Representative Edwards, with or without the language, we would be participating. So.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair, I would like to suggest if they are going to convene a work group that the budget note be modified to request that they report to the emergency board on the outcome of the work group meetings as well as any proposed legislation. I think that would help the legislature to understand the background.
Okay. All right. Any objections? Any other questions regarding ergonomics? Thank you very much.
You need a motion?
Let's do a motion.
Okay, well, Madam Chair, I would move that we insert the word new between any and ergonomic, and that we request that before this goes to the co-chairs for their approval, that we add a sentence at the end indicating that they will have a work group reviewing proposed or possible regulation, and that the results of this work group be reported back to the emergency board.
Any other questions?
I wonder if we could also just add a statement that we believe that a safe work, an ergonomically safe workplace is desirable, and we support that.
May I make a suggestion that we add that as part of the narrative in the budget report,
okay.
and then have the budget note following that.
Okay. Motion carried. All right. Well, the Senate has, you know, Republican staff meeting 9:30. We have 6 minutes.
I'm wondering, Madam Chair, if it might be more appropriate, since we don't really have time to get through this. We had just discussed bringing this back on Monday. That'll give me time to get approval from the co-chairs on the budget notes. If we could just do this on Monday.
Okay. Very well. We're adjourned.
No fighting here.